from stpetecatalyst.com.
And ladies and gentlemen, my name is Bill DeYoung, and welcome to the Catalyst Sessions for Friday. We got a weekend coming up, although you'd hardly know it. We got a weekend coming up. Hey, I want to talk to you about a friend of mine who's waiting here to talk to you. The MGA Sculpture Studio has the 4,000 square foot anchor space in the former Softwater Laundry Complex on Fifth Street South. This 3-acre facility, also known as the Arts Exchange Campus, I like that. It's ground zero for what's known here in St. Peter's, the Warehouse Arts District. Mark G. Ayling, that's what MGA stands for, is president of the Warehouse Arts District Association, the 501c3 organization that supports local artists with a box full of tools, including community revitalization, marketing, advocacy, very important, and educational programming. MGA specializes in the design, fabrication, and installment of public artwork and architectural ornament. I don't know what that means, but let's ask him. What does architectural ornament mean? That's a nice phrase.
When I first cut my teeth in the business of making sculpture for a living, I was in St. Louis, and there's a lot of architectural ornamentation there. And I've always had a passion for architectural ornament, probably because I started out early on, right when I finished undergraduate school, working for the Seattle Opera. And, you know, like a capital on a building, that would be architectural ornament.
Yeah.
Or a frieze, or, you know, all the different types of ornamentation that there is that's associated with architecture. So I did a lot of that kind of stuff, original pieces, and then restorations of pieces and things like that.
You know, as well as being a creator, obviously, you're known as, around here, as a very vocal proponent of public art. I can remember talking to you when the controversy over the Eppelmann sculpture was happening. Tell me why you believe public art is so important in this or any other community. You're an advocate. Tell us why.
I'm an advocate for the arts in general, but public art in particular is one of those things that, when you go into a community that's embraced the arts, and there's, you know, really cool stuff to see and experience, it shows a commitment by that community to embrace the arts. And some of the most culturally fulfilling communities that I've experienced are ones that are really committed to the arts and have really vibrant public art programs. You know, Kansas City comes to mind. It's a small city, but, you know, the Kansas City Artists Institute is there, and believe it or not, it's largely funded by Hallmark. But they've got an incredible number of sculptures and plazas and, you know, fountains, and it just enriches the cultural environment. So, you know, it's a signifier of a community that's really committed to the arts, that they're willing to give a percentage of their dollars to enriching their physical environment.
Well, what about St. Petersburg? I mean, in your mind, is St. Petersburg kind of put its money where its mouth is? I think of St. Petersburg as a city of the arts. I mean, how about you as far as public art? Is this a good place to be?
It's getting there. It's getting
okay.
There. Now, I say that, there's a very broad range of definition of what public art is. You know,
yeah.
The St. Petersburg, the city founders did an amazing job laying this city out. It is a beautiful city. The relationship that the city has to the water is spectacular. The parks, you could consider the parks a form of public art because they're engaging the natural environment in relation to the constructed or urban environment, and it makes for a really beautiful downtown. So in many ways, the city of St. Petersburg is incredibly culturally rich because of that design. And that's a form of public art in a way.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are some really nice public art pieces. I think some stuff that's going down on the pier is really cool, and that shows a more recent commitment. The murals in the city of St. Petersburg are you know, incredibly significant. And
well, that's your most obvious example of public art here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about this before in some story or other, but I wondered, You do a lot of commission work, and I've got some photos I want to look at here in a minute. But to you, what's the difference between, or is there a difference between a commission piece, I want something like this, and like sprung from the head of Zeus, creative thing that you yourself come up with artistically? And are they both like great challenges and fun, all of that?
You know, there's a whole myriad of explanations or examples based on that, but this is how I try and sum it up. So I've been making stuff for a living all my adult life. And it took me a very long time to get to a point where anybody cared what I thought. I had tangible skills and I was able to make a living utilizing those skills. And I always kept my eye on the prize, and that prize was to get the client to come to me and ask me what they want instead of telling me what they want.
Yeah.
So public art is this really unique opportunity where there's an agenda that I have as an artist, things I want to communicate, things that I want to explore, play with, elaborate on. And public art dollars are dollars that they're there. Okay. You know, you can sit in your studio and make stuff and then try and find a buyer for it. With public art, the funds are present. There's a budget that's established and you're competing more or less to get at those funds. So in order to do that, you have to marry what you're interested in as an artist with what the client is interested in, what their goals are.
This is what I'm talking about. I mean, how do you, you know, fulfill that artistic longing inside of you, you know? So the idea is to sell them on a design that's part what they want and part the way you want it to look. Is that right?
Well, it meets their goals and meets your goals. Yeah.
Exactly.
And it does it within a certain time frame and a certain budget. So, you know, there's a business side to all of that too. But I tell you what, it gives you an opportunity if you're willing to work within a certain confined notion or constraint, which I have learned over the years is one of the best ways to find true creative outlet is, you know, give yourself some parameters. Put a boundary around something, and then it forces creative solutions that otherwise you wouldn't come upon. So, you know, I even had a really significant instructor when I spent a couple semesters at University of Washington in Seattle in doing undergraduate work. And I had this teacher, and his goal through the class, this is a printmaking class, but his goal was to teach the students how to learn, how to challenge themselves when they're outside of the school environment. You know, when you're in school and you have these classes and structures and these things, they're giving you assignments and you're learning how to grow. What happens when you get out of school? How do you stay motivated? How do you challenge yourself?
Yeah.
And to a large degree, that's by like picking a series of constraints and then learning how to function within them. And, you know, it's a unique form of inspiration. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, isn't the danger there you could lose the creative spark and I'm just a fabricator, you know?
It is a danger.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I tell you what, I just recently purchased a water jet, which is a huge business investment. And I avoided it and put it off for years because I did not want to be the water jet guy. I didn't want that machine to run my future where I was, you know, financially obligated to this thing to keep it running, to justify its existence, to pay for it.
Well, explain really to us who don't know what you're talking about, what a water jet is.
It's a piece of equipment that takes plate material or sheet goods and uses a CAD program to cut out stuff. So it's incredibly handy for fabricating because you can cut pretty much anything. This door that's sitting behind me, that's all made out of drops that were cut on a water jet. So that's like six layers of 3/16 inch thick aluminum plate.
It's a cutting tool is what you're saying.
Cutting tool, yeah.
Wow, with very strong jet water. Well, has it justified itself yet? Has it paid for itself yet?
Yeah, it is. You know, it took a whole, there's a lot of business involved in this. You know, there's balancing budgets and making investments and that kind of thing. But it'll take me, well, pre-COVID, it would take me about 3 years to get it paid off. And I'm on schedule for that. The first year, you know, the biggest miscalculation that I made when I bought the thing is, sure, the machine costs a certain amount, but getting it into the building and getting it calibrated and getting the facility modified to accommodate it costs almost as much as the machine itself.
It must be huge.
It's a big machine. It'll handle a 6-foot by 12-foot plate of material, and it can cut through steel that's 6 inches thick. So there's huge possibilities for it. The piece that's sitting behind me is a model that we made for the engineering process for the Gladiolus piece that's in front of the police headquarters. And the model was cut on the water jet, and the finished piece was all cut on the water jet. And that piece was done before I purchased the machine. And it was one of those things that particular year, it was like I hit a threshold on how much money I was outsourcing to cut all that stuff. We're generating all the files, we're doing all the design, we're processing all the materials, and then I'm paying out all this money to get the material processed. And it was like, you know, you look at the numbers in the books and it's like, shit, in 3 years, I could pay one of these off and have the ability to use it. And right now we can play with it. We can utilize that technology and experiment and explore and do all sorts of cool stuff. So I don't regret it. Although there was a period last year where financially it was like, shit, doesn't expensive.
Well, you know, one thing I want to do here is you just mentioned Gladiolus Blossom. And so I want to bring it up here and show it to folks. Because it is, can you see it there? Is it on your screen?
Yeah.
This is in front of the new St. Petersburg Police Station, for those of you who aren't familiar with that. So Mark isn't sculpting tiny little things to put on coffee tables. This thing is, what, 20 feet high and weighs 5 tons?
Yep. It's a lot of stainless steel.
What is it made out of? It's all stainless steel?
Yes. Well, there's some gold on it. You know, the interior sphere there is spun stainless. And then it's got a layer of gold plating on it. So there's a electrolytic process where you run current through it and it transfers gold onto the surface. So it was mirror polished and gold plated. So you get this, you know, very thin molecule thick layer of gold on it.
And I have another picture that I nicked off your website. Give me a second here to find it, which also shows shielded the other piece at the police station. If I can get it to work, where is it? Well, maybe I can't get it to work, but anyway, it's up there. I'm going to try it one more time. Shielded is here. What was getting this particular commission like from the police station? How did they tell you this is what we want, Mark, or were you able to sell them on an idea?
This particular project was
there. It is
was incredibly vague what they wanted. The call to artists. So for folks who don't know how this process works, you know, traditionally, and there's tons of variables in here, but traditionally they send out a call. It's national, international, sometimes it's only regional. This was an international call, and there were two pieces available or that were part of the call. And you put out an RFQ or a request for qualification. So you submit what you've done in the past, and you might say a sentence or two about what you might do here. And in that call, they basically said, we want artwork that will create, I'm paraphrasing here, will create a feeling of welcome for visitors coming to the police headquarters.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the police headquarters can be intimidating. So, you know, you take that. So then, you know, after the RFQ, you get shortlisted and they take a handful of people. Sometimes it's three, sometimes it's five, you know, and they give you a small stipend and you put together a concept. So, I put together a concept for both the interior and the exterior piece. And, you know, I until a couple weeks, you know, you got a couple months to do this. And like a week before the thing, I'm thinking, you know, gosh, this one piece is not working, the gladiolus, and that's one I really wanted. And the other piece, the wing, was coming together so well. And I was like, man, I hope I get one of them. I'd love to just get the wing. And then we were able to pull the gladiolus piece together in the final days of putting the application together. When I say we, MGA, I've got 8 people helping me out now. I've got a designer that helps me and an office manager, and I've got a number of people that help with managing and running the fabrication side of things. It's a team effort. Yeah. I am very fortunate in that I get to direct that team, but you know, I can't do all this stuff by myself.
Well, shielded, the wing, which we're looking at, I think we're looking at here. All I see is a blank screen, but it tells me it's up. How big is that? How big is the wing, man?
The wing's 30 feet from the tip of the wing to where the wing mass would connect into the body of the eagle. And the longest feather on it is 18 feet. And that's a very different type of fabrication than the gladiolus piece, because that piece, the fabrication, the gladiolus, is super simple. It's all the work is in the computer, and all the problem solving is happening in three-dimensional space in the virtual world. You know, Alex and I are going through and plotting every connection, every joint, and the sequence of connections, and all of this stuff. And the wing is, well, we've got these parts, but each one of them is cut on the water jet, but it's a flat plane, and we want to make it look like a feather. You know, you're trying to take 3/16 in aluminum and make it look light as a feather. So there's just tons of hand forming and pounding and smashing and bending that goes into doing that. And there's some really fun video on the website of the guys, and I think we had put it on Facebook at some point, of the guys. We built this big press brake. It was a manual press brake, and it was sort of this dance that the team was doing to bend these great big sheets, you know, and it was big enough to hold either 8-foot or 10-foot long pieces of these wing parts. The feathers that are 18 feet long, we're bending those in individual components and then matching the contours and welding them together. And then the whole thing had to be hung from the ceiling, which was a huge technical challenge, just figuring out how to do it, which is, that's one of the things that makes me most excited about this stuff, is like, give me a problem and give me an opportunity to figure out how to do it. And I'm happy as a clam.
Mathematics comes into science, mathematics. I'm wondering, you had to learn something about the anatomy of birds.
Oh, and that's the best part, is you get paid to like study history and anatomy and all this stuff. You get to do a deep dive into these things, you know, just learning about the gladiolus and why that piece was justified. The whole concept behind it is, you know, the gladiolus was named after the gladiator.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the root word is Latin for sword. So, and the reason for that is the whole this is a single blossom off of a gladiolus flower. Yeah. And they look like a sword, and the Romans used to wear them into battle. But you know, it's like, what would be welcoming in a police station, you know, flowers. And I love flowers because they get at this math that's inherent in natural forms. And there's truth in that kind of stuff, which I find very inspiring. Yeah. So I start looking at, okay, history of flowers. What kind of flower is going to relate to a police department? I find this whole lineage of the gladiolus in relation to the gladiator, and there are all these core historic meanings, you know, with loyalty and honor and all these kinds of things, which are the primary tenets of the police headquarters. So
it all made sense. And the city said, yes, Mark, well done. We couldn't articulate it ourselves, but this is exactly what we wanted.
I tell you what, when the piece was unveiled and the whole police headquarters was, the chief of police actually referred to the definition or description of the sculpture in how the police relates to the community, which I was, you know, I was incredibly grateful and, you know, honored that connection resonated with him.
You're a crime fighter. You're Batman. Hey, I want to look at one more picture and then something else to talk about, because this is maybe something that more people have seen. This is at the Florida Aquarium.
Yeah.
A piece of yours. There's a pretty lady looking at it too. Who's the lady in the picture?
That would be my lovely wife, girlfriend at the time the shot was taken, but that's Carrie Jadis.
Yeah.
And actually Carrie she developed the concept for this piece and we designed it together. So, you know, the Florida Aquarium had approached MGA through an art walk, believe it or not. You know, I was doing art walk thinking, you know, it's good to share with the community how this process works and exposed to the arts and the kind of work that I do. I didn't really ever think I'd like make money off of artwork showing my studio.
Yeah.
But in walks one of the design team from the Florida Aquarium, and I get a phone call, and then they ask us to do their entry wall. So Carrie and I sat down and put a number of designs together, and this is the one that they selected. And I still love this piece. You know, it functions on a lot of levels. It's also a donor wall for them. So if you want to give the aquarium money, then one of these individual birds or fish in here, they'll engrave your name on.
How many fish, how many birds? I mean, can you tell me? I mean, thousands, looks like hundreds.
Yeah, many hundreds. And there are portions of this that are all cut from a single sheet. And then there are additional birds and fish that are independently mounted that add to the depth and the variety. Some of it's optical illusion, you know.
Yeah, there's great depth in it. That's what I'm saying here. Yeah.
It's called Ripples of Life. And there's frosted acrylic in it, and there's LED lighting. And the hardest part of this thing is that curved wall. We had to go out and make a template off that wall. And I actually built a mock-up of that wall in the studio so that we could contour all of those panels to match that contour so we could mount it in the space and it would look seamless.
Wow. Hey, very listen, you just got hired to do the sculpture for the entrance to the pier, the Tony Janus thing from 1914.
Yeah, First Flight.
And I wondered if, I want to look at it. Is it in your studio there? Can we go look at it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me take you into the studio here.
Catalyst Sessions is going on the road, folks. Great.
This is a fun piece because, for one thing, it's huge. And you have to build it in multiple sections. And the engineering on it is just insane because, you know, this thing was made out of balsa wood, not balsa wood, but light wood and canvas. And it was never intended for hurricane force winds. So we've got to take this design and then modify, stay as true to the design as possible, but using stainless steel, design it so it can withstand incredible wind force. We don't want this thing to fly. That would be a problem. So
we should
you can see it. There's a lower wing here.
This is a biplane.
This is a biplane, 45-foot wingspan, and it's 1-to-1 scale ratio. So it is the actual scale. So you can see here that the surface is all perforated. So I actually had this perforated stainless steel custom fabricated for this thing. So it's got a 40% negative space in it. And then right there is we're working on the framing of the second wing, you know, the top wing and the biplane. So we've got a temporary truss built. You can see this X in the middle of this image. This is a temporary truss that's kind of like scaffolding that's supporting that wing right now. Because that wing frame, it's 1/4-inch thick stainless cut on the water jet, of course.
Yeah.
It's floppy as hell as it is. So we have to have this structure underneath it to support it. But once it gets the skin on it, that skin's on the top and the bottom. It is rigid as could be once it's skinned like that. But we'll do a truss system like this to match the cable system that helped make the wing all work. To give you an idea how big this thing is, I'll walk down along this, and you can see the second half. So we're building the wings in halves. And they'll... So this is the other side. And here you can see the skinning process taking shape. So yeah. We've got a frame, we've got an underside there. In fact, the guys were just welding this section on. And then we've got this top skin going on. And I tell you, I'm really happy with how tight the fabrication is on this thing. Guy's been doing a really nice job on the welding. It's just some beautiful welds in here. There's so much structure around these points support those vertical supports, and there are truss or gussets in here that it's just, there's tons of engineering and little pieces and parts and details. It's just a crazy amount of work to make this happen.
You know, I was just thinking, man, if you were Michelangelo, you would have had to build that plane out of a big hunk of rock. You know, sculptures come a long way in a couple of hundred years.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I'm walking over to the figures here. So they wanted a bronze likeness of Tony Janus and Mayor File. And here they are right here. So this is carved out of expanded urethane, which is a glorified word for foam. It's a really nice foam that is, it's expensive, but it allows me to tool it just like wood. Uh-huh. So you can see behind these guys, there's all the historical research that goes into this, and learn about this plane and the history of this thing and the event and the history of St. Pete and how it relates.
Yeah.
It's just a blast. It's really cool to sink into this. This, you know, the poses here are based on a famous photograph of them landing in Tampa. So, you know, for those who don't know, the flight took off in downtown St. Pete. In fact, the monument will be right on the site of the original hangar for the airline.
I did hear that. Yeah, that's fantastic.
And this is the first commercial aviation flight in the history of aviation.
Yeah.
The first time there's a paid passenger in an airplane. Right here in St. Petersburg. It's an amazing piece of history. It happened in 1914, took off in St. Pete and is an airboat. You know, this thing has a boat hull under it.
Yeah.
And it took off in, let's see, here's a picture that shot that I was, everything's based on. Let me see if I can get to this here. There you go. There it is. That's Tony Janus waving at the camera landing in Tampa. And you can see it's a big boat hull.
So it just landed in the water.
It took off the water, landed in the water.
Wow.
Does
Will Michaels come down there all the time and say, no, that's not quite right, Mike. You got to tweak that a little bit.
Well, you want to hear a funny story. You know, there's sort of a rhythm that is involved in making these sculptures. And so this is me as Tony Janus and Mayor File in what I call turnaround. So from these, I can generate a three-dimensional object. It's basically, I got a rotating base and I put a tripod out and we spin the piece. So you get all of those different heights and elevations. You got X, Y, Z axis, everything you need to make a three-dimensional object cut out of a block. So I was working on that, and you can see in the photograph that Tony Janus has the hat on backwards because I got all this research here of Tony Janus wearing his hat backward because he's flying at literally 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
His brim's going to pull his hat off, right?
Yeah.
Well, except we're looking at that photograph that I was just showing you, and Will comes up with a version of this photograph that's clearer than anything I could find, probably straight from the History Museum. And we zoomed in on it, and I'll be damned if Tony Janus didn't have his hat forward and his goggles on the brim of the hat. He's using his goggles to hold the damn hat on.
Yeah.
So I had already started carving it backwards. So now I had to take the hat off and cut the bill off the back, and this is a piece that's attached to the front. And all of, so from here, I coat this with resin, then I put a oil-based modeling clay on it, and I do the fine tooling and detail in clay for the bronze. So these are patterns, and we take a mold off them, then they get cast in bronze. And so I've got to redo this whole hat forward in the clay.
Here's the thing. I mean, you could have just left it the way it was, and how many people, except for Will, would have said, no, he wore his forward, you know?
this is an example of, you know, Will is the chair of the not-for-profit that was put together to commission this piece.
Of course, yeah.
And I defer to him that he wanted the pose to be a specific way to relate to the photograph that everybody recognizes historically.
Yeah.
So at that point, it's like, I'll turn the hat around.
So the next step is you, once it's all ready, you make, you just explained it, you make molds and then that's cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It actually goes to a foundry. I don't have bronze casting capacity here in the facility.
Uh-huh.
That's another one of those layers of investment that it's like, you know, you got to be married to doing bronze. And these days I do a lot more metal fabrication than I do this kind of work. But I love doing this. This is all my hand, you know. A lot of the other stuff, I'm managing the process. I come up with the ideas and work through. I establish the work process for the most part. But I've got a team that makes all that stuff happen. So I do more managing on the making of the other portion, but the carving stuff is my hand. You know, that part of it I really love.
What's the target date for this? You know, I know the pier is kind of in flux as to when it's going to open at this point, but what to your understanding, when is this going to happen and when is this going to be installed?
So what we're shooting for right now is an August installation date. And as long as we can stay on schedule, you know, the challenge of this kind of thing is nobody's ever built one before. So we can estimate how much time we think it takes to do stuff. And because I've been making stuff for a long time, we get pretty good at it. But every now and then, like this first wing, we had a couple of challenges in getting the fabrication process down. And, you know, just when you look at these things, they're on these big carts. So, you know, we had to just make the carts in order to support the wings. And we started with I have a whole bunch of these carts laying around from doing other projects. And it's how we actually roll it out of the building and work on it. And it's material. But we started the first wing on a cart that we modified. And we found certain fabrication challenges that were happening. So we had to go back and say, okay, look, this is what we've got to do to support this thing, to keep from getting distortion. Stainless, it's a beautiful metal. It welds beautifully, but it's very, very liquid under heat. So I don't want to get too technical here, but it is not a great conductor. So when you put heat into it, it doesn't dissipate. So it tends to warp really badly. So you really have to control. It becomes a very technical metal to work with. So
in other words, August is just a potential date.
Yeah.
This, you don't really know what's going to happen between now and then with the stainless, you know.
Well, you know, if you got a flexible process, that's okay. It's welcome. You let the material do what it wants to do. But when you got a design that's trying to meet historical criteria, you want to be able to control that stuff, you know. So what I'm trying to show you here is this is the Gantt chart, and this is the side of this stuff where, you know, this is a business. Yes, it's a creative business, but, you know, it's an endeavor that costs money just having this facility, and you got to balance. If you want to keep doing it, you got to figure out how to balance all this shit.
Yeah.
Excuse me, can I say that?
Oh, it's all right.
I think that's probably the third one of those that's come out of my mouth.
I know. I'm counting. Mark, we are out of time. This has been great. Now, moving forward, now I want to get everybody to take us on a tour.
There you go.
You know, it's always so static. This has been very, very cool.
Well, I didn't even get to tell you what's going on with the Warehouse Arts District and the Arts Exchange. We'll have to do that another time.
Well, before we go, yeah, the one question that I did have was phase two. I think was the last thing that was on the burner somewhere.
Yep.
You know, the parking lot and design and what's going on?
Yeah, we just got some additional funds. We're going to finish out the plaza and put in some lighting and some landscaping. And we're actually adding an electrical grid so that we can do art markets here or any open air markets, which I think is going to be really significant as we come out of this whole COVID thing. For people to be able to socialize, outdoor spaces are going to be ideal for that. So there's there's new stuff coming down the pipe for the Arts Exchange, and the district is moving forward in a really great way. You know, the factory is coming online, which we're excited about.
Yeah, right.
There's some, there's some really exciting things happening in the Warehouse Arts District right now.
That was the last time I was physically over there was Kira walked me through the warehouses, walked me through the factory. And, you know, we've done some stuff with fairgrounds and all of that that's going on. But I see a lot of potential there. And I imagine you do, too.
You know, the depth that it adds to the creative community here. And, you know, the Warehouse Arts District envisioned the Pinellas Trail becoming this major arts thoroughfare for events. And that's, we worked with the city and the county to illuminate the trail. And now we've got the Morian Center for Clay and the Arts Exchange and Duncan McClellan and Raw Studios and Behar Architects. And now the factory all within a few blocks. There's just so many cool things happening. It's driving a whole nother wave of development in the city, which I think is very positive.
Which is something we've circled back to what we were talking about before was, you know, the arts in a community. And I can't think of anybody else I'd rather talk to about it, man. I always enjoy talking to you, but I am out of time. Thank you again for taking us through everything.
My pleasure. Thank you for reaching out. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too, man. Say hello to Carrie for me, and we'll see you soon.
All right.
All right, man. Thanks.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
From stpetecatalyst.com.